based on the stakeholder of the Kakot making of our presentation, we will really appreciate that. We are going to be taking your comments seriously and see how we can effect them. Unfortunately, we have a very tight schedule, and I see some of the submissions are very long. Well, what I would like to propose, within that 40 minutes, which was generous, we usually do talk about 30 minutes for both submission and discussion. But we're a bit generous this time, we said 40 minutes. We are going to be sticking strictly to that 40 minutes. And that is both presentation and discussion. If whatever reason you decide to use your 40 minutes for presentation, that means we are not engaged. And again, if possible, I don't think we need to go to the history. Who am I? Where do I come from? What is the history? We need to be concentrating mainly on those clauses which we feel we are hip with this one, but would like to change this one, and this is the motivation. That is going to assist us, the committee, to see which way to go. We do have a program here saying who is following who. That is not cast in stone. We are not going to say if number 7 is not here, we are going to attend until number 7 comes. But that's going to take whoever is here. And again, our number 2, in this case, African Teachers Union, unfortunately, we don't have the hard copy. And I think what would assist us as members is that hard copy, even if we are going to have this overhead. So I'm proposing that for now, until we have that documentation, we are going to take that item 2 down the line, because members will need to make some comments on the document itself. So for now, we are going to start that straight away with the statutory of chartered accountants. And as I say, I'm going to pretend as if I'm a computer now. When it comes to time, I'm just going to stick to that time. My not-so-correct watch is saying 10 past 10. So I'm allowing, therefore, to be the speaker to make it through this. Yes, guys. Yes, there is a speaker document. There is a speaker document. Was not in the package. If you have a package, you find that it's already in your package. Those have a package. Over to you, Saika.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Parliament. First off, I'd like to take the opportunity to thank you for giving us the time to go through our submission. I just want to introduce who we are. My name is Nadia Zari. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Institute. Next to me is Audrey Plena. She's an integral part of our education and training area that looks after the qualification of chartered accountants. And Jeffrey Ndoyama, is our compliance officer, who looks after our ETQA function and the like. I'd like to briefly, very quickly, just give you an overview of what CIPA is and what it does, and Audrey will then go through our submission. So, Jeffrey, the next slide, please. Very quickly, what SACA is, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, is a voluntary, non-statutory professional body. We represent about 20 chartered accountants globally and globally. About 20% of our members are abroad. The remaining numbers are here, spread across the public sector, working in commerce and industry, and working in your large, small, and medium order firms.
Is your mic on?
Is that better, Chair? Much better. CIPA's role essentially is to confer the TA designation on candidates who go through the process. And as we go through our submission, that's for us is an important distinction to make between a qualification and a designation, which comes up often in the bill that we're looking at today. SACWA was the first ETQA that was accredited by SACWA, and you see there was the first learnership. We registered the first learnership through PASIS, and we currently have 9.5, close to 10,000 trainees or learners on our program. We have 900 and growing accredited workplace providers. So these would be training firms in which individuals who have completed their studies or are busy with their studies are going through a formal, a structured training process. And at the moment, we're the only body through which qualified or registered auditors can become auditors. So almost 99% of auditors in the country are registered members of the Institute of Chartered Accountants. We also, or the South African CA currently, is probably, still has been and continues to be recognized as one of the preeminent accounting qualifications both locally and globally. And that qualification is very sought after, especially in countries like the US and the UK. And so for us, one of our big problems is the faster we qualify people, the more those countries steal them from us. So, in South Africa, we have a huge shortage of qualified chartered accountants, and it doesn't help much that they keep getting snapped up in other countries. Just to say quickly, the three areas we're going to focus on in terms of our submission, and you'll see it in the document in front of you. One is just the distinction between a designation and a qualification. And Audrey will talk you through that, but it's a fundamental difference that we believe should be, some cognizance is taken of it in the bill, but we believe it needs to go a bit further. We want to talk a bit about quality assurance and then the transitional arrangements, but also specifically about the where we perceive there to be inconsistencies between this bill and the skills bill. And essentially what we're saying, if the intention is to look at a qualification in its entirety, there needs to be consistency between different pieces of legislation, but we will talk through that. So, Chair, all of that said, I'm going to hand over to Audrey to walk us through the specifics.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member. I just briefly, perhaps for everyone's information, just briefly speak you through the process for qualifying as a chartered accountant, because I think it does, it is germane to our comment on the bill. In order to qualify as to achieve the designation of a chartered accountant, there is an academic component which is currently delivered through 13 accredited public higher education institutions. There has been a component of workplace learning, which is at the moment managed through a learnership, and then there are two professional examinations which are administered by the profession. So we the qualification process straddles both higher education as well as workplace learning. As Nadia said, there are three areas of concern for us in the bill, but just practice to comment on the areas with which we are happy, and I'll keep this very brief. We're happy with a balanced and comprehensive definition of professional body and professional designation. We think there are significant improvements regarding the role of SACWA and the QCs, as well as the preeminence of the bill in cases of conflict with other legislation, because we know historically that has been an issue. Recognition of the role of professional bodies, obviously, statutory and non-statutory, in education, training and skills development. As a non-statutory professional body, we would welcome that. Providing for consultation and cooperation with professional bodies. As a QC will have a distinct nomenclature for its qualification type that will enable a professional body such as SACWA to develop or register its professional qualification via the relevant QC. And registration of qualification on the NQF is required for a CETA to establish a learnership. This will enable a professional body such as SACWA to continue to structure its workplace learning component of its qualification into a learnership. Those are the areas with which we are entirely happy. The three areas of concern. The first one relates to the registration of professional designations on the NQF. The bill or the act says, or the bill says that the act applies inter alia to professional designations. The issue we have relates to, first of all, the distinction between what is a qualification and what is a designation. In our understanding, a qualification is a statement of competence, which once achieved requires no further input. whereas a designation is subject to ongoing requirements that have to continue to be met in order for a person to retain the designation. The implication, therefore, is that a designation can be removed or can be lost. The second issue is then also the different usage between this bill and the Skills Development Act Amendment Bill. The Skills Development Act talks about qualifications being registered. This bill or provides for designations to be registered. Clearly, from CITES' perspective, the use of either of these terms has significant implications. The second issue with which we have some concerns is that the proposed 3QCs may lead to a fragmented approach to the quality assurance of education and workplace-based learning. The amendment bill and the joint policy statement referred at some length to an integrated approach to education, training and skills development, and CITES certainly welcomes such an integrated approach. We are concerned, for example, at the higher education level where we function, that we would return to the discrete and fragmented approach that characterized the pre-SACWA, if you like, education and training field. We would like to see a mechanism which isn't immediately apparent from the way the bill is drafted now of how education and training would continue to be dealt with on an integrated level. The draft legislation provides for professional bodies to register designations on the N2F, as I said, but the Skills Development Act proposes for CITES to establish learnership if the leadership would lead to a SACWA registered qualification. This may preclude professional bodies from participating in leadership. We subscribe very strongly to the principles of leadership and would like to be able, as a professional body, and I'm sure many other professional bodies would like to be able to continue to participate. Our last issue is the proposed transitional arrangements, which appear to conflict with those proposed in the Skills Development Act. In this legislation, professional body N2As who are credit providers in terms of the regulations issued under the SACWA Act. And in terms of this bill, this arrangement will continue until the regulations are appealed by the Minister, whereas the Skills Development Act says that CTAs will immediately be recognised by the CCTO, and there's no reference to professional body CTAs. Once again, it's not that PSYC has a particular preference on which way this should go, just that we would see clarity that it would be directly impacted on by this. So our main proposal relates to Section 28(1) of this bill being amended to provide for the full delegation of quality assurance by the Quality Council to a recognised professional body. This will enable us to perform the requisite quality assurance functions in respect of our own designations. Obviously, we have a direct interest in the continued perceived quality of our qualification, our designation and the brand. And we also, just perhaps for the information of the members, proposing in terms of the Skills Development Act amendment that the provision perhaps be made for a fourth sub-framework for professional qualifications. That's just for the information. So perhaps just in closing to say that we do subscribe and have always subscribed very strongly to the spirit and the intent of the N2F, as evidenced by the fact that we were the first N2A. We remain committed to participating in national and legislative structures to enhance the quality of education and training, to redress past unfair discrimination, and will continue to engage constructively with these structures. Thank you.
Chair, if I could just add one or two things. I think others covered it nicely, but just to repeat, for us the distinction between a designation and a qualification is important. In terms of what any professional body would do for you to retain your designation, there's numerous things you've got to comply with once you've qualified. So your qualification is at a point in time, it's something you hold for the rest of your life. For you to retain your designation, you've got to comply with very stringent, for us, post-qualification structured learning activity. There's a code of conduct you've got to subscribe to, which if you don't subscribe to, there's disciplinary action. So there's a whole series of events that happen post-qualification, which for me, a professional body, any body that looks after a designation must make sure is maintained to keep the value of its brand. And I suppose ultimately what I'm saying is that's something that the market looks after. So if that brand is naughty and it doesn't ensure there's integrity and ensure there's this quality in what it does, very quickly the market will take away the status of the brand and it will be replaced with something else. And our second point really is just around ensuring, and like Audrey said, SAIC has been very committed to this process over the years. And one of the things we'd really like to see more of or an improvement in is integration and coordination between the education and the training side. Ultimately, for me, if the bill is there to, if one of its objectives is to, in the public interest, ensure the quality of what comes out at the end of it, of the qualifications that come out at the end of it, it must look after the qualification in its entirety in an integrated way. Now, I think the two pieces of legislation do talk to that, but we just, from what we're reading, can't pick up how they integrate and how they coordinate to achieve the objective of managing the quality of the end product of what comes out at the end of it. So I think she just summarized those were really the two big issues. Sorry, Chief?
Thank you so much. I think we do appreciate your presentation. It's quite clear. You know what you are proposing. I don't know whether my members have any comment or question from Honorable Davis.
Chairperson, I think in the first place it's understandable that various bodies would emphasize the issues that are of importance to them, and here in particular, you know, the question of professional qualifications. One wonders, however, you know, whether the bill does not broadly try to address that. They ask, for example, for a fourth sub-framework for professional qualification. Now, looking at the sub-frameworks, it says there are three, and A is general and further education and training, B is higher education, and C is trades and occupation. And I think to an extent those sub-frameworks try to incorporate the area of professional qualifications. One would like to hear what the state law advisors in the department has to say on this, but one wonders, in fact, whether the Act does not, in fact, adequately cater for, the professional qualifications emphasis that is placed by the body that's in front of us. Thank you.
We need a mic for our recording here.
My question is fairly linked, to the previous question. We have been happening a lot, these first presenters on the issue of qualification, professional designation. I don't see the light clearly because the object of the Act or the amendment on page 3 states very clearly, that the Act applies to qualifications offered by educational institutions, skills development providers, and professional designation. I thought it was encompassing enough. Perhaps we need some elucidation from the legal advisors from the state. Where is the deficiency which I don't easily perceive as a layman? Thank you.
I don't know if I have any comment on those comments. I understand, as you know, these are points of clarification. We are not going to be agreeing or not agreeing now. That's to get a no as far as what.
No, Chair, Mr. Steele was looking a bit expectantly at us. I don't think it's our intention to try and respond to any of this today. I would hope so that he understands.
Why don't we leave it at that? And as I said, now is just to get information. You have a better understanding. We're not going to say one nay or yay. We're just going to be looking and seeing whether it fits in. And then when we're deciding, we'll be clarifying as to what are the issues. Why are we deciding one or other? Thanks ever so much. Following that same light, they take 40 minutes to mean 10 minutes. Can we go to number 3 now? Bursa. Is it Bursa? CIA. Catholic Institute. Thanks ever much, Tata the Council. CIE, my not so correct word is 10:30. I do have in my big give it to me.
Honourable members, the House at large, all protocols observed. Good morning on this cold Cape Town morning. I'm Kevin Rizal from the Catholic Institute of Education. I'm the advocacy officer. Seated to my right is Mr. Mark Potterton, the director of the Institute. And we'd like to thank the committee, firstly, for having these public hearings and also recognize right from the start the role played by the department, by the three QCs and Parliament in terms of getting this NQF bill to where it is at the moment. I think it's been long overdue, we can all agree. And it's real positive development in that sense. I'm going to just quickly introduce and raise some general comments, following which Mr. Mark Hutchinson will give some context and challenges, and towards the end I will provide you with the actual amendments that we would like to this bill. So without any further ado, the Catholic Institute of Education is associate body of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, and at the moment it's a service provider to 350 Catholic schools and other schools with 170,224 learners and 6,225 educators. There's also a skills development office which at the moment has 21 training centers linked to it, and in some of the larger centers over 1,000 learnerships have come through the system since 1997. One of the overriding concerns that we've had with the NQF is in terms of its stated objective in Section 2 towards the further development, organization and governance of the NQF. It seems to do very well on organization and governance, but may be lacking in further development. But that's something that we can obviously go through in this discussion. In terms of the general comments before I pass on to Mr. Potterton, we would recommend that further consideration is made to looking at it from a framework of lifelong learning as opposed to learning, which is where it is at the moment. And I think that Parliament has a very strong responsibility here to provide the QCs and the department with very sufficient mandates that will take us further within skills development and transformation in the country. And within that, some ideas that can be thrown out, and we haven't really incorporated these because it's difficult with the current bill to do that, is to look at adopting notional education and training time as a measure, as a measuring volume, especially to get some movement in the recognition of prior learning. And I think that's an area that when we look at NQF on the broader level, we should think of how does that actually work at that base level as well. Also, we've tried to raise concerns about maybe giving mandates to look at design rules, rules of combination, obviously within a good framework of discussion with experts in the field. And this, again, would be a way of providing a template for combining individual national standards into part qualifications, into modules, and making them more accessible. But through those general comments, I'll pass on to Mr. Potterson.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, ladies and gentlemen. I'll just take you through quite quickly without the slides. I might move faster. Just to say that the comments that I'm going to make are historical and relate to the reviews of the NQF and seeing how we've taken those forward. And I make these comments in the light of the overall aim of this bill to provide for the further development, organization, and governance of the NQF. We all know that transformation of education hasn't been easy, that it has been a divided society, and that trying to transform an unequal system has been a mammoth task, and perhaps more mammoth than we ever imagined it to be. The intervention efforts that we've made so far have done away with racial differentiation and dealt with many of the problems, but class differentiation does still dominate. Oh, the cartoon up, if you go back one, sorry. The cartoon there recognizes the limits, perhaps, of the NQF. And the comment is, you're starting this course on new computers, and by the time you're finished, they'll be obsolete. I think one of the limits of the NQF has been that times have changed and things have changed, and there's been a need to change. It's also that caged birds don't fly very easily. It's increasingly clear that outcomes-based reform hasn't necessarily served us as well as we thought it would. We also know that the economy is stronger now, and we also know that there are still huge skill shortages in the country. And so closing skills gaps, improving equity, and achieving greater labour market efficiency and higher levels of productivity, which underpins the original NQF idea, hasn't necessarily worked as well as we'd hoped it to work. But we'd like to welcome the recognition in the bill that there is unnecessary centralization, conceptual and procedural rigidity in the NQF, and hopefully that will move as we move forward. If we move to the next one, the NQF was introduced as a key mechanism for overhauling a divided system, as I've alluded to earlier, with real noble objectives. And we're pleased that the objectives remain the same in the revised bill: an integrated framework, access to mobility and progression, enhancing quality, accelerating redress, and personal development. If we move to the next slide, at the heart of the construction of the NQF has been the desire to take an integrated approach to education, training, and skills development. But despite these aims, things weren't going well. And the reviews of 2002 and 2003 show us. And perhaps I'd speak to each of the comments from the review and say how we see it going forward. One of the comments was the proliferation of NQF bodies and structures, especially for standards generation and quality assurance. This was the review comment. That the architecture embracing policies, regulations, procedures, structures, and language was unduly complex, confusing, time-consuming, and unsustainable. This isn't dealt with substantially in the bill, But there are, in the memoranda, there are some hints that this is going to be looked at. The recognizing that everything can't necessarily be defined in terms of outcomes. There is also recognition that there may be a place for curriculum, and also recognition on page 14 that we are looking for fit-for-purpose learning outcomes that are not separated from what is learned. And I think that's very important. And that next cartoon, I Ate My Homework, just reminds us that we are looking at different kinds of learning and different ways of assessing the learning. And I think the establishment of the three sector quality assurance QCs has addressed this. Perhaps we go to the next, to the denudation of government authority over the NQF policy regulations leading to conflict between some stakeholders. I think that's been addressed, and the bill does outline the roles of each of the stakeholders and places government in firm authority. And the misplaced application of stakeholder principle leading to failure, basically meaning that that's not really dealt with that well in the paper. The lack of recognition of the diversity of approaches, practices within education, training and skills development wasn't recognised, and that is being recognised now. So just to recap what the new bill does, and I'm moving towards the end now, the authority of government over the NQF has been affirmed, and this is a good thing. The current system of standards generation and quality assurance has been reviewed and will be streamlined within the three quality councils. And hopefully the concern that individual experts be involved in the process of standards generation would be looked at as well. Moving on to the next slide, there is a recognition that various forms of learning are required, and that's important, and then that the standards of occupational professional competence required for registration or membership is also recognised in the bill. So those are positive responses to some of the critiques that have been raised in the past.
Honourable members, I think at this point it's worth moving into the legal changes that we would propose from that. And the one is, as I mentioned earlier, just the issue of lifelong learning and raising that as something that needs to go into the definitions and not learning as it stands at the moment. And we would recommend using it in these terms to say that lifelong learning means the acquisition of appropriate education and training over the lifetime of persons in all ages and circumstances to fulfill their personal, social, and economic potential. If the above recommendation was accepted, we would then add the following definition: education and training means the instruction of knowledge, understanding, values, skills, competence, and training. Another issue that we have with the definitions, and this is a very debatable issue which this committee would have to look at, in recent legislation, in particular the Child Justice Bill, and I believe the Sexual Offences Bill, both chaired by Honourable Eunice Karim, they've moved away from using the term Minister of, because departments and structures in government may change, and instead have opted to use Member of Cabinet Responsible For. Now, that is a minor thing, but if that is a change happening within Parliament, I suspect that a bill from Parliament should follow the standard in that line. And that would obviously avoid further amendments later down the line. In terms of comments on the preamble and the explanatory memorandum, we would, again, looking at international type of issues, at the within the preamble, whereas the advancement and recognition of lifelong learning, and again to add the lifelong learning issue, I want to just motivate that quite clearly. One interesting example that we've come across within the Belgian context is the opportunity for self-study within the national qualification framework. So a matriculant comes out of matric, doesn't have the greatest matric, and they have an opportunity to then pick up a self-study course, get examined on it. And normally what happens is it's linked to some sort of a grant system based on a point. So if you have a scarce and critical skill like IT and someone self-studies for a year, picks up a module course, they get a bonus kind of study grant, knowing fully that once they get that, they will be employed and therefore get off the grant system. Now, if you adopt lifelong learning as a principle, those possibilities open up, which currently we might be too rigid at looking at. In terms of actual comments on the bill itself, in terms of Section 5.3b, we would advise that we add, in addition to internationally comparable, just the term and regionally integratable, largely because there have been moves within the EU at least and other places where regional integration of NQFs becomes a significant factor. I think we're all looking forward to some development sometime in the future in Zimbabwe, and that would mean that South Africa, as we've done in the DRC, would have a role to play in rebuilding this economy. Having a regionally integratable NQF would then obviously open up the possibilities for more South Africans to be involved in that. In terms of Section 28KI, and this has been an issue that has come through in committees, I think most members are used to seeing me skulking around in your committees and hearing the debates, but it's the issue of when QCs do research and whether or not that needs to be done in consultation with the department or the minister. And we would recommend that it is done in consultation with the minister to avoid duplication, to avoid situations where one QC and the department are in effect researching the same thing. I think we have to be especially careful of that when we're looking at public funding. And those at the moment, members, are what we can offer you as changes. I think we could have offered more, but it's different, and we're at a stage of transition, and I think as we see this develop, you will probably see us in a hearing in a few years' time adding more. And at this point, I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to make comments on the bill. And within that, I'll just close off with a quote from Mampela Rampele's "Lang Goes to Rest." "Our long road to transformation has only begun. One alternative is for us to remain prisoners of our history. The other is to become agents of its making. Transformative leadership is needed to help us acknowledge our dilemmas openly and inspire us to transcend them." Thank you, members.
Thank you. I don't know my members if you want to comment now. Any clarity, any... I think my Honourable would want to say something.
I just wanted to comment on lifelong learning that he quite often refers to, that I think the current system of education is trying to actually address that, in the sense that we're trying to move away from the previous system of education where when a learner passes matric, he or she knows nothing, rather than only addressing envelopes. But the system of education that looks at actually providing learners with skills so that they can be able to earn livelihood out of those skills, I think it's really trying to move away from that system of apartheid education, and I think we must appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I think that is the... We really appreciate that. Thank you. We are now going to move to business initiative. Business initiative of office. The business initiative will break for about 10 minutes and have some refreshments. and which I'm waiting for him to get to this slide. Thank you. I'll follow the queue, and on behalf of Philippines of South Africa, thank the members of Parliament for allowing us the opportunity to also make input in this bill, which we, as business, people might say we've got very, very little understanding of how education works. But we feel it is important for us to comment because most of the people who work in business are beneficiaries of the entire education system and the qualification system in this country. And the qualification system in this country, therefore, has got to be relevant to what the labor market is about. And therefore, we feel it is important for us to make a comment, even if it is not a big comment, because we are highly and directly affected by education in this country. we've got only two specific comments. We're going to try to short-circuit the time and effectively save the meeting on time and speak for much less than the 40 minutes allocated. We've got just general comment and then one or two specific comments that we would like to make. On general comments, Honorable Chairperson, is that we believe that the NQF integrates and gives meaning to all education and training in the training qualifications in the country. There must always be one NQF. We feel very, very strongly as BUSA that we want one NQF. Because it is frustrating for business to relate to a number of institutions for a qualification. We therefore want this one NQF to ensure a single unitary qualification system in the country. BUSA is concerned about the potential removal of the accountability of quality assurance from SACWA. When you read the spirit and the mode of this bill plus its attaching bills, that is the GenFedCOA, the ATQ, and the QCTO, the accountability of SACWA needs to be emphatically stated in the bill. There needs to be clarity on SACWA as an apex body. We feel that the bill needs to sort of incorporate that. BUSA supports the QCs and feel that they have a very critical role in enhancing the work of SACWA and accelerate the approval and registration of qualifications on the NQF. By appealing for one NQF, we are not seeing the irrelevance of the QCs. They are very much relevant. However, the NQF must remain being one solitary NQF. Next slide. Now, when you look at some specific comments that are related to the concept of the sub-framework, going to an extent of naming the sub-framework in line with the quality council is a bit of a concern for us. We're concerned that when you have sub-frameworks, you run the danger of creating boundaries or ring-fencing the quality councils around the NQF around that, and then you kill the spirit that is in the NQF, the spirit of articulation, progression, portability, and things like that. Business is not about giving education, but educational institutions are very important for business. They are important in the sense that there are certain things that business can do in terms of helping people acquire skills, but in terms of helping people acquire basic education, it is the core competence of educational institutions. However, there is a very strong linkage between those two. And if you then ring-fence the QCs, we have a problem. We believe that we want one NQF coordinated by the three QCs. And QCs operate within certain levels of the NQF. That's how we see. So the division of the NQF into sub-framework has a potential of fragmenting the NQF, especially where the role and responsibility of SACWA is merely that of coordination. It's very difficult to separate qualification from quality assurance.
And we are concerned that if you really say that SACWA must only be a coordinator, you remove that responsibility of SACWA to ensuring that there is quality assurance as well. It is important to clearly distinguish between NTF levels and QCs. Sometimes we felt that the bill, I refer to one or two examples there, just one example. We think that the bill sometimes creates a confusion between quality councils and the sub frameworks. This distinction is not clear when one reads Chapter 2, Section 7 and Chapter 3, Section 8D. Next slide. SACWA's role should really be to coordinate the work of QCs regarding the standards and qualifications. This role cannot be separated, I'm repeating myself there, it cannot be separated from the role of quality assurance. The NQF that allows the articulation and integration, that allows for articulation and integration is required. The creation of sub-frameworks within the NQF runs the risk of creating unnecessary boundaries that will thwart the spirit of integration, of the spirit and intention of the NQF. And that is integration, progression, articulation, all those that are in this NQF bill. The last slide, Chair. Once the concern of sub-frameworks is addressed, it should enable an easier review of the other two bills, general and further education training bill and the higher education training bill, higher education quality bill. So actually also including the QCTO, which we believe that it's still in the making. And perhaps I was asked to throw in a caption that it is unfortunate that we're dealing with the two bills, the Skills Development Bill and the NQF bill in parallel. It would have been much easier for us as business if these two bills were dealt together under one roof, not in parallel sessions. But then we would actually thresh out commonalities and differences and things that actually are required by the two bills to make sure that we've got one NQF, to make sure that we've got one quality assurance system in the country. This will further enhance the coordination and collaboration between and amongst all the QCs. And that's very important for us. As I said, Chair, we don't see ourselves as specialists in education, but we are concerned that we'd really love to see one NQF as business, and we know when we relate on NQF meters, we relate with specific quality control, rather than going round and round and round. That would actually be frustrating for business. Thank you very much.
Any comment from my member?
Chairperson, the first, the general comments that were made, namely that FUSA is concerned about the potential removal of the accountability of quality assurance from SACWA. I think there's, when one reads the Act, when one looks at the explanatory memorandum, page 14, under simplification. You know, there's an outline there of new statutory quality assurance bodies that have been added to work within the SACWA system, so that many of these bodies will be taking over quality assurance. And I'm simply focusing attention on that to indicate that it may not be entirely, that one notes the concern about potential removal of accountability, but there are other bodies that have been established since then to take care of that particular duty. Thank you, Chair.
In a sense, no, more or less on the same vein, no. The presenter shows a lot of concern about, you know, the substitution of SACWA with other sub-frameworks, with some of us think that it's very appropriate, given the environment of learning then, like, you know, the JANSEQA, which addresses, you know, education at school level, I would say. And then, you know, their higher education, again, you know, determined by the environment, again, and specific objectives, trade and occupation. So one has got the feeling, subject to his comments, you know, or respond to what, you know, I'm asking. That, to me, his concerns, you know, do not seem very, very, very serious. They are serious, but not extremely, in the sense that the duties are carried on. And the act itself, if you look at the objects of SACWA, that is, you know, clause 12, that together with clause 14, the functions of SACWA, in particular 14F, to me seems to address your very concerns, because as we move on, there will be collaboration, as the act indicates very clearly, to guide the mutual relations of SACWA and the QCs. Those QCs are referred to. What then, in the opinion of the presenter, is a missing connection, because this realignment of these things also is there to precipitate, you know, better cooperation, you know, between the two ministries, labor and education. Thank you.
Welcome, Honorable Mukongi from labor. I want to say something.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to welcome the presentation. Just want to follow up on what you are raising, that the question of quality assurance have been outsourced from SACWA to QCs. I'm not sure whether Musa have read the whole bill. One, if you look at page 6 of the document, there is a SACWA board. The SACWA board has representations from the QCs, and the decisions are being taken there related to everything that relates to what the HUF is supposed to be doing. And therefore, that what QCs will be doing, they are also of the money that SACWA is informed of. That is the first one. The second one is on page 10. If you look at page 10, Roman would say J, it talks about issues of information matters. With regard to information matters, it gives you also the relationship, what SACWA will be doing in relation to the choosing. You can look there. The last one is page 15. If you look at page 15, it gives you what the bill seeks to give responsibility to the N2F implementation to three sectoral quality councils. That whole paragraph, it gives sense to your concern. So don't you think the whole bill, its continuity, is the response to your own concerns as Busa? Thank you very much.
Busa, do you want to comment on those comments?
Thank you very much, Chair. Just one little comment is, what do you are really appealing for in consideration of this bill? Is that When you talk about the MQF, we realize that SAQA as a body might not necessarily have the capacity to actually deal with all the what is required in terms of dealing with qualification issues. And therefore, the issue of the council, we feel that the MQF needs to be coordinated by quality councils and concerned that the MQF is going to be broken into subframes. That is our major message that we are sending through. Because we, whilst we appreciate and respect the fact that there are, there will be CEOs, if I'm not mistaken, sitting at the board of SAQA, the CEOs of the three quality councils will be sitting there. We feel, we do not have confidence, to be right up front with you, that practice and what is happening at SAQA board is actually going to be the same. Because current practice, if you go to the various, if you go to SAQA, you do feel uncertainties and unhappiness. Right now, as we are talking, there is that representation. But right now, as we are talking, there isn't always agreement. And that one of the reasons why it has taken so long for the review of the of the NQF. So we just feel that, and we are not saying they must go out of that board. All we are saying, we want one NQF. We are disagreeing with the concern of the sub framework, because it's going to create for us other long drawn out processes, because we're now going to have to meet requirements for sub framework 1, requirements for sub framework 2, requirements for sub framework 3, and we never get on with what we really want to do as business. That's the message. That's a very strong message we would like to say. We want one NQF coordinated by three quality councils, with SAQA having an oversight role over the three quality councils.
Arabka.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, through you to the presenter, I think that you know what you're proposing. Well, let me start off by saying that it is not stated at all at the moment in the bill that there are three NQFs. There is one NQF, and then mention is made of sub-frameworks. I would like to know from you whether you really think that your proposal as it is formulated in your written presentation would make that much of a difference. You are saying the NQF is managed, that's your proposal, by three, not one, but by three coordinated quality assurance councils, each of which will focus on specific levels of the NQF, and then you mention exactly these three sub-frameworks. Although you don't use the word sub-framework, it basically boils down to the same kind of idea. So I would like to put it to you and hear your comment on that, but I would like to put it to you that the way you are formulating it here in your written submission wouldn't really make that much of a difference in addressing the concern that you have. What would be your comment on that?
Chairperson, through you, if you look at the QC, which is the current dispensation, the QCs, you've got SAQA, and you've got QCs that are deemed to be quality councils, I mean by law. Our confusion with it is that although you have SAQA,
you are creating three other councils which, although you are not stating it, but you are giving them the same sort of legal status as SACWA. Because they, the SACWA's role then gets in our understanding, and maybe our understanding might be wrong. SACWA's role then just simply becomes that of receiving developed qualifications and then registering them on the N2F. Because these quality councils are actually established by law. And that makes the work of SACWA very, very difficult in the sense that there might always be some kind of deadlocks or disagreements which might delay the process of registering qualifications on the N2F, because these are all deemed to be quality council, I mean ETQA. And therefore, that is why we are concerned about using the word sub-framework. Because although it is a sub-framework of a main framework, the sub-framework actually opens the door for us to make it a body corporate, if you like.
Why don't we stop at that open policy path? Let's leave the there for now. I think we have an understanding now. That's where you are coming from. And I think we do appreciate it. This is just the framework that they stand for, and we do have. I think let's leave that for now, unless there's somebody who's itching to say something. Okay, thanks ever so much. I'm proposing now that we break for refreshment. Okay, can we make it 10 minutes? It is 10 past now. We will be starting with the next. We start at 20 past. Thank you.
Now, first of all, can we have a new slide, please? We focus on three aspects. The first one, the objectives of the NQF versus the rest of the bill, which we say must be in line. And the second one, the representativity of the SACWA board and the quality council. And the third one is the responsibilities of the two ministers. Now, first of all, if one looks at the objectives, next slide, please. I took only the first two, which are to create an integrated national framework for learning achievement and to facilitate access to and mobility and progression within education, training, and career paths. If one puts that differently, then it reads as follows, as we see it. It's an integrated system of national qualifications which will make it possible to let all learning achievements of individuals count towards the progression within and between education, training, and career paths. Now, sir, that's still the objective as it was in the previous act, in the SACWA Act, and as this act says, that remains unchanged. Now, what is important is that we must realize that underpinning that is a programs approach. And if we look at that diagram there, on the left-hand side, you see that qualifications and standards are developed and registered by bodies, and then they are registered by SACWA, They are registered on the National Qualification Framework, and then the education and training is provided by providers, and the ETQA exercise quality control. Now, there is nothing mentioned of SACWA. It's a programs approach. It depends on the program at issue. There's no question asked where the program comes from. It's the content of the program and the objectives are that are achieved. and the credits that are obtained, they count towards further achievement, towards higher levels of achievement, progress towards higher level of achievement. Now, and that made sense in that act. If you look at the new bill, it's a systems approach. It's not a programs approach. You have three clearly defined sectors, the GFET, then the higher education, and trades and occupations. Now, the Act doesn't say exactly which levels these three quality councils will be involved in, but it's more or less probably something like that. As you see there, the blank spaces mean, well, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, for instance, in the case of trade and occupation. But the fact is, it's not a programs approach anymore, it's a sector approach. Now one must ask yourself whether the objectives can just remain unchanged. And we say they can, but then the Act must be, but the bill must be brought in line with that. And currently it isn't. That's a statement we want to make. Now if we look back at, next slide please, why the NQF under the SECRA Act has not performed as expected, we feel that SECRA has not sufficiently used the powers which it had in terms of the Act to generate the necessary involvement of the role players and stakeholders in standard setting. The quality assurance part was managed very well. I'm not saying that SECRA didn't function well, it did. But we feel that it could have imposed its authority, its powers, more on the role players that should be involved in the setting of standards, the generation of standards, because that's what it's all about. Quality control is one thing, but it can't be done if you don't have proper standards in place, proper qualifications. And the point that we'd like to make is that the universities in particular did not provide the expertise which is required for the setting of standards at the 10 levels, at the 10 levels, not only the highest level, at all levels, because the expertise is with the university, the basic knowledge. And it should have been made available by those universities. Now, the level descriptors were ineffective and did not make the equation of qualification possible. And I think that's the core of the whole NQF as it was approached in the SECRA Act, that it should make possible articulation, mobility, everything. Candidates should, or their people should be able to move and change career paths, etc., and get credit. And for that you need equation, proper equation, and that was not successful. Now if we ask ourselves why the NQF, under the NQF bill, will not perform to the objectives, because we feel, as the bill reads at the moment, it's not going to perform the way it should, or is expected to. First of all, the bill does not give SECRA the power to ensure the cooperation with the Quality Council. I can refer, for instance, to Section 28, where it says that the Quality Council must take into account the policy formulated by SECRA when doing its work. Now, take into account does not mean is subject to. So we feel that it's a little bit untidy as far as that is concerned. It will make it very difficult for SECRA. The bill's description of the NQF, specifically the levels, does not provide sufficient details. The explanatory memorandum claims that there's a difference now because this bill explains, it describes the NQF. Now, as far as we are concerned, that description is not sufficient. For SECRA and the QCs to reach agreement on the level descriptors, the descriptors will have to be reduced to that which is acceptable to the three QCs. The three QCs will have to work together, reach agreement on what is acceptable, together with SECRA. And we anticipate that this will make the equation of qualifications questionable. Because you will have to cut back so far to find that which is common to all three, that the level descriptors will be useless, if I can put it very frankly. And the bill, in terms, remember that we're talking in terms of the objectives as stated. The bill does not emphasize the importance of the academic disciplines in the setting of standards. Doesn't feature at all. Now that's what we think is a problem. Now, if you look at the next slide, and this is where I want to apologize if it sounds if I'm becoming technical, but we have to emphasize that if you want to do equational qualifications, you need a common core. And that common core lies in the disciplines, the basic academic disciplines. Even in trades and occupations, there's physics involved. There's mathematics everywhere. There's languages everywhere. If you go into human resources, there's the social sciences. This is a structure that is worldwide. It is a common ground across the world, and we should use that, and it doesn't feature at all. But remember, we say, if we want to work in terms of the objectives as our state. Now, the 10 and 9 there is levels 10 and 9, and then, of course, there's the other 8 levels which we couldn't indicate there. Now, can we move to the next slide, please? Thank you. Our first proposal, then, concerns the objectives, the design of the NQF, and functions of SACROC. Now, the first is the objectives should envisage the NQF as a national framework of coordinated sub-frameworks for learning achievement and not integrated. Now, this is different from what the previous speaker has said. We want to emphasize that the way the Act is written, at the moment, the bill is written, the objectives are actually to coordinate, not to integrate. Integrate means that you're making one thing, and that's all these possibilities to get recognition of previous learning and all that. Now, the bill is not written according to that objective. If the objectives remain unchanged, in other words, an integrated framework, then in order to ensure the achievement, the bill should give more powers to SACROC. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Or, and now come a few points, if we could have them all on the screen, please. The first one, the bill should indicate the levels which apply in the case of each sub-framework. Now, this is a description of the NQF. Because SACROC is known, you know, it doesn't have the power to determine everything. So the bill must be clearer on certain issues. The bill should determine criteria for the formulation of the level descriptors or state that the minister will determine such criteria. And then section 14.1g should determine the SACROC will perform this function subject to the criteria determined by the minister or by SACROC or whatever, but somewhere it must be said. And the bill should determine that expertise in the basic knowledge disciplines should be involved in all standard setting activities. Now, sir, having said that, the FAOU proposes the first option. The first option which says that the objective should be reformulated to say that it's all about coordination and not integration. The second proposal concerns the representativity of SACROC and the QCs. Now, as the bill stands at the moment, the representation of teachers is not guaranteed. And teachers are one of the main role players in the provision of education and training. And if I say teachers, I'm referring to the colleges as well, the FET colleges and the schools. And there's no guarantee in the bill that teachers will be represented. And it's teachers are normally represented by their unions, and there's no guaranteed union representation on these structures. Now, as the bill reads, and we say the objectives, if they are changed, then the teachers should be represented on the QCs, not so much at SACROC level, but the Quality Council. Because if you look at those acts and the amendment bills of those, again, there's no provision made. It says that the minister must invite these stakeholders to nominate people and then appoint a certain number of those nominated people. But it doesn't say that it should be representative of teachers, of educators, that there must be someone. And we feel very seriously that this is a major shortcoming because, you know, teacher training, for instance, is a big concern in this country at the moment. And it's done by universities. It's a Quality Council on Higher Education. There's no teacher here. No teacher representation has said it. Education has got one or two people there, which is too little. We must realize that if this becomes the act now, that the role of the HDE is going to change. It becomes a quality council. It's a different role. And representation of this sector of the teachers is extremely important, and the educational course. So the last one, proposal three, is the responsibility of ministers. We just ask a question. Is it advisable to have two ministers given executive responsibility? In this case, the Minister of Education being responsible, he has the executive responsibility for the NQF, which means executive responsibility for everything, which includes the three QCs. But on the other hand, the Act also makes the Minister of Labour responsible for the QC for trade and occupation. Now, the question that we're asking, are we not creating a situation here where the Minister can actually be vetoed by the Minister of Labour? Because the Minister of Labour is responsible for the QC trade and occupation by law. And that can create a situation which is even more serious than it's been up to now. We've had problems with these two departments cooperating and providing the support that SACWA requires. And with all respect, if you allow me to just refer to the Skills Development Bill, Amendment Bill, it really makes us very concerned about this cooperation that is required to make the NQF work. You don't see very much support in that bill for the NQF bill. That's the last proposal. Thank you, sir. In summary, one can just summarize by saying, the last slide, please, that the objectives should envisage a coordinated rather than an integrated approach or framework. If they were to remain unchanged, the objectives, then the framework should be described in greater detail with the emphasis on the importance of academic discipline in the setting of standards. The second one, teacher unions, should be represented on the quality council. And the third one, experts should advise on the viability of two ministers being given executive responsibility for the NQF and or parts thereof. Our proposal, I think I didn't emphasize that, is that as far as the ministers are concerned, the Act should be very clear in saying that the Minister of Education, in spite of Section 8, what Section 8 says, is overall responsible for the NQF. So, like some people say, who goes to jail if this whole thing doesn't work? There can only be one person, and that must be the Minister of Education. Thank you, sir.
The Minister of Education needs some lawyers now to defend. Let's go to jail. Any comments? Yes, one of them.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, I would like to really welcome the presentation from Sawukar. I wanted the presenters to be very specific in proposals. One, we are proposing that in terms of the functions of SACWA, we need to put more teeth on the functions of SACWA. You use the question, the word authority. So what kind of authority? Is authority in terms of quality assurance, standards, and qualifications? Or is authority in terms of governance? of this structure. Because if it's unclear, it's going to be also unclear how to put it on the paper. So which authority and teeth that you're talking about that you must put? Because your proposal could be similar to the Busa proposal of really the authority of OSAC. So I want you to really explain that. The second one, you have articulated that the NQF is going to be no longer program approach but sector approach. What do you mean with that? Which sectors? You approach the issues of sectors in relation to the quality councils and each all and also sub frameworks as sectors or because don't you think that the sub frameworks they will have also their own programs? So there will be no program approach in councils and frameworks. If you know, maybe you understand what I'm trying to say. So because even if there were only two or one or even no council, but there were programs. But because of now the establishment of councils, you said and frameworks, you suggest that will make that there's no programs, but it's going to be, which I don't think that would be the case. That's my second question. You also asked the last question, what is common in all the three? In my own assumptions, it says that in all the three councils. But you also contradict yourself by talking about the national qualifications framework, which is what is common in all the three. But their duty is to implement the common in a sub, you know, framework. So why do you raise the issue or the question of what is common of the three? Because it is common of the three, which is the broader national qualification framework. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think the concern of teacher representation, you know, seems quite valid. I'm more concerned about the form which you should take, you know, because one would definitely expect the minister or minister's consent to involve the stakeholders, you know, the key stakeholders at each level, you know, of QCs. You know. When I talk about form, are you envisaging a situation where the unions, let's take the issue of teachers, suggest candidates, or as one would expect, the minister appoints, probably in consultation with the leadership of teachers. I'm raising this concern because we're not concerned here about labor relations issues, working conditions, and so on. The focus is on quality assurance. So the issue should be the appointment of teachers with the necessary competencies to ensure that quality and competence. Because I've got a concern if now the unions must be represented here, if they are represented through those teachers, whatever no, the stakeholders are, they shall be carrying a mandate. And we are concerned here with efficiency, that things must get done as fast as possible, without obviously violating democratic principles. So can the presenter elucidate the mode of representativity that would be expected? Because I do not envisage even the Minister of Labour in appointing, not consulting the leadership, of trade unions. Thank you.
You can respond on those.
Thank you. The first question, take what authority,
we would say that it's not so much the governance, that was the word used, of the quality councils, because they can function in the way which is best in terms of the work that they need to do. But the framework within which they must govern themselves must be set by some authority, specifically as concerns standard setting and quality control. How they do it is not important, but that framework must be there. The second one, no programs approach anymore. What we're trying to say is that you're the point of departure in the SEQA Act was programs. The point of departure now would appear to be a sector approach. That doesn't mean that we say there's not going to be any program development. The program development is still going to form the core of the activity of the Quality Council. But it's now that council that does it, but at an NQF level, at an overall level, the programs, the emphasis has shifted towards the sector. And we are saying that if that happens, you have to look at the objectives. Otherwise, the two are not compatible, the objectives and the content of the bill. The third question was, what is common then? What must be common? What we're trying to say is that, if I may take an example, a specific example, let's say the engineering sector wants to develop a qualification, and the pharmacist sector wants to develop a qualification. Then they should be using the same unit standards for physics. They shouldn't develop their own. Now, at the moment, there are unit standards that form the core for languages and mathematics. But as I indicated on the screen, there are more disciplines at play here. And if you ignore those, you get a situation which we have at the moment where we have thousands of qualifications and it's extremely difficult to equate them. Have I answered that one? It's fairly complicated. The last one, teacher representation. Well, I'm glad that we get support for that, the fact that teachers need to be represented. But the form or the mode in which this happens, we say the reason why teachers have to be represented is because the teacher at classroom level knows the needs of the learners and the problems they have to. Otherwise, certain things like the basics can become eliminated from programs, etc. And we are concerned about what universities are doing at the moment with regard to teachers for the foundation phase, for instance. That's the reason why we say they should be there, or education at least should be stronger represented. Now, the teacher unions do not necessarily have to sit on the councils, because that can become quite a problem. The councils are going to grow in size because of different teacher unions. But the council should know that if structures are established for the development of programs in their sector, that teacher involvement is essential. That is a form of representation, which means that teachers are involved, but they don't necessarily sit on the council, although that would be the first try. And the consultation, of course, remains very important. If I understand that question correctly, the approach followed by the bill at the moment is good, that all these stakeholders are given the opportunity to nominate people, and then the minister decides who to appoint. Now, that reflects a consultation approach. Now, we would say that needs to remain. But there must be something that says, in the end, there must be visible involvement of the teacher sector. Thank you, Chair.
We are not at the support stage yet. So I don't want you to go with an impression that something has been supported one way or that. We are just discussing, getting information. there's a question from Honorable Kongi that was not answered. Which one is that, Honorable Kongi?
No, you know, it's a follow-up, Chairperson, before we leave, because Labour is sitting now at 12. The last question, in their summary, Chairperson, they spoke several times about coordination and so on, in terms of the objectives. that the objectives should envisage a coordinated rather than integrated framework. You know, are they married to that? If the objective could say envisage a coordinated and integrated framework, are you going to die if that is the case?
Now, we would say that the term integrated, as the bill reads at the moment, must be taken out of the objectives completely. Because it's not in the mechanism that is put in place by the bill will not promote the objectives if the objective is to create an integrated system. It is a coordinated system that is being proposed by the bill by the sections that follow on the objectives. Now we say, if you want to retain them, it's fine. If government decides to retain the objectives, then it's fine. But then we have said all the other things that need to be changed in the bill to make that possible. Fine. But if the rest of the bill remains like it is, then the objectives have to be changed so that integration is out and coordination comes in. Let me give an example, Chair. That's my last word then, if you allow me. If you say that, for instance, and it's not what we're proposing, the school-university route forms a core, and there the quality councils for further education and training and for higher education are then involved there, in this one pillar, if I can put it that way. Another pillar would then be the QCTO. And they can be expected to build on what is done in this other one. But we don't necessarily say that the outcome of what they're doing is can be equated to a next level on the pillar. If I have to re-explain that, that is coordinated. The Council for Trade and Occupations can do whatever it wants. It's done at the moment. If a learner wants to do something, you ask him, what can you do? What have you done? And that comes from school education. For instance, there are other fields of experience as well, but I'm just using this in my example. In terms of the three quality councils, two of the councils could form one pillar. That is from level 1 to level 10. School education, right through higher education. Now we say trades and occupation must look at these levels and what happens at the levels and build on that. But the rest is open for them to do what they want to do, but there will not be necessarily be equation of the end product with a level higher on the pillar. You see, that is then not integration, but cooperation and coordination. Thank you.
We also appreciate that input from Labour. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. We are going to cross over now to Vincent Hesser.
Thank you.
Yes, you can find.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Eunice Ballam. I'm Deputy Vice Chancellor at Wits University. I want to beg the indulgence of this committee because as a result of inappropriate coordination, HESA ended up on the program as well as this. What we've decided, in fact, is to make this a HESA presentation.
I want to integrate.
Importantly,
what you're seeing in front of you is a phalanx of HESA representatives, not an individual institution. And the CEO of HESA, Mr. Duma Malaza, Dr. Duma Malaza, will present on our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mike, is it on now? Yeah. Thank you. HESA is a representative body of public higher education institutions in South Africa. We welcome and appreciate the opportunity to make the presentation today. Mr. Hugh Amor will be, who's the registrar at the University of Cape Town, will be making the presentation on behalf of HESA.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. We welcome this opportunity to address the committee on this bill. We want to state at the outset and place on record that HESA supports the 10-level NQF for the classification, registration, publication and articulation of quality assured national qualifications. We welcome that. Secondly, we welcome the bill's proposal for three coordinated sub-frameworks. We believe that's very important. We welcome, too, the distinct nomenclature for qualifications. One of the novel features of this bill, which we're very pleased to see, is the provision for the proposal for the registration of professional designations, a matter to which I will return. The framework for the registration of qualifications and professional designations can only contribute to the public good, and we believe that the addition by way of the registration of professional designations will further enhance the value of this legislation. We have a number of key points and concerns that we wish to put before the committee for its consideration. First of all, we see a major function of this bill as being to define the relative roles of the four groups of players involved in this process. At the apex of the four groups stands SAQA, which has the role of coordinating or integrating the qualifications. And we welcome the definition of SAQA's role as provided for in Clause 14 of the bill. The second group are the three quality councils provided in Chapter 6 and in particular in Clause 28. The third group are the educational institutions. The fourth group are the professional bodies. We believe, Chair, that a major aim of this legislation must be to ensure that the relative roles of these four groups and within each group of the different players are properly defined so that everybody is clear as to who does what. And we have in this respect a number of concerns. The first concern that we have is that we are not convinced that the bill adequately defines the relative domains of the Quality Council for Occupation and Trades on the one hand and the Quality Council for Higher Education on the other.
I'm sorry, I don't know whether I'm using the same document. I'm trying to follow so that when you ask, so I can, the document I'm using is not saying what you are saying.
No.
Do you have a summary?
Chair, this is I'm trying to present the summary of the document submitted by the various institutions rather than going through any of the particular documents. That's part of the issue that Professor Ballam referred to earlier. So we're trying to integrate the HESA submission and the submission by BITS and to highlight the key issues. And Chair, the first key issue that I wanted to address before the committee, if I may, is this question of ensuring that the domains of the quality councils are clear and distinct, particularly in respect of the relative domains of the Quality Council for Occupation and Trades on the one hand and the Quality Council for the HEQ of the CHE, the Council for Higher Education, on the other. The second issue in respect of this relationship issue that I wish to address, sir, is the question of the relationship between quality councils, between higher education institutions, and between professional bodies. We see the key function of a professional body as to define the exit competencies required for professional licensing in the profession concerned. We don't see the professional bodies appropriately dealing with quality assurance and accreditation of qualifications. We believe that the bill has that objective in mind, but we believe that the bill needs to be explicit in making the distinctions between these roles. And I'd like to give some examples. One, first, a comment on professional designations. As I said, we welcome the notion that professional designations will be registered. We believe that that can only contribute to public confidence in these professional designations and a better understanding of what they represent. So, for example, whether that professional designation would be PRENG for a professionally registered engineer, or the Fellowship of the College of Medicine for a specialist in whatever branch of medical practice that qualifies the person for, or whether it's a CA, and of course there are many, many other professional designations. We believe that the registration of those is a positive step. But we believe that it would be very important to ensure that the criteria for the registration deal with the definition of clear exit competencies required for that professional registration or professional licensing. Where an academic qualification leads to, or in part leads to, that professional licensing, we believe that the professional body must set the exit competencies, but must not, nor must the QC for ONT, overstep the role of the Council for Higher Education as the quality council for that academic qualification. And that's a key issue, a key concern for universities. If one takes, for example, the Health Professions Council of South Africa, a statutory body which has professional licensing responsibilities, professional licensing in its area of domain requires, first of all, that they determine the exit competencies for qualifications, and secondly, other standards, including standards of professional behavior. Now, we don't want to go into the question of professional behavior issues or the question of licensing fees, which professional bodies set up. That is entirely a matter for the professional bodies. But from the point of view of higher education, and we believe so from the point of view of this committee and the quality councils, the relative position in respect of a professional body such as the Health Professions Council of South Africa in respect of qualifications must be clear. The qualifications on the HEQF will be registered having been accredited by the Council for Higher Education as the Quality Council. The QA, the Quality Assurance and Accreditation role, will therefore rest with that Quality Council. And we believe it must be very clear that there's no overlap and there's no confusion that the QC for ONT would be dealing with those simply because that academic qualification is a prerequisite for the professional designation, which is also registered on the NQF. And there is the possibility, we believe, of confusion. We believe that an explicit provision in the bill which made that clear would assist us in this respect. And we would like to just emphasize that it is the view of Higher Education South Africa that the QA and accreditation roles appropriately belong and must be strengthened in the Quality Council, the Council for Higher Education. We entirely support that. We, in no way do we believe that that's inappropriate. We believe also that it is the proper role of professional bodies to determine licensing provisions, but we don't believe it's the professional body's role to determine how academic qualification should be structured. Exit competencies for professional registration, yes, but the how, the QA, the accreditation, those we believe should be firmly under the QC for the HEQF, namely the Council for Higher Education. Chair, the next issue that we would like to address is in relation to the role of quality councils. As I've said, we see these well defined in Clause 28 in Chapter 6 of the bill. We believe that the functions of quality councils would be further strengthened if standard setting were made an explicit function of quality councils in respect of Clause 28. The next issue that we wish to address is, we believe, a relatively minor one, but it's an important one for us. It relates to the higher education quality framework. The Department of Education and the Minister have developed the HEQF after consultation with many bodies, including bodies in the sector and including Higher Education South Africa. We believe that the HEQF, as promulgated by the Minister, will evolve and must evolve. And we are concerned that Clause 36 provides no mechanism for the amendment of the HEQF as promulgated. And we believe that a minor amendment to Clause 36 to provide that the HEQF as promulgated remains the higher education qualification, and we believe that an amendment to that clause to say until amended in terms of this Act would be appropriate so that there wouldn't be no need to come back to Parliament for a change in the HEQF. We don't believe that was intended, and we believe that a minor amendment of that sort would be appropriate. Chair, if I could just then sum up, I think that the key issues that we have from higher education in South Africa are to welcome this further evolution of the NQF, to welcome the provisions that are made both for the functions of SACWA in Clause 14 and for the Quality Councils in Clause 28, but to request that consideration be given to ensuring that the bill properly defines the relative roles of the four major players. We believe that SACWA's role is appropriately defined. We believe that the Quality Council's roles are appropriately defined, except that we believe that there is need to ensure that the relative domains of the three Quality Councils, and particularly the QC for OT and the Council for Higher Education, are clearly demarcated, and that the way in which professional bodies operate, particularly in respect of the registration of professional designations, ensures the appropriate demarcation of roles. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I have two questions. You stated, correct me if I'm wrong, but more or less that the professional body should define the exit competencies for professional licensing. They should not be involved in quality assurance of qualifications. But there's also a distinction in some cases, for instance, in the case of the medical profession, when you would compare that, for instance, with the chartered accountants who have been here just now, the bar and the sidebar and so on. We actually have, in addition to the academic qualifications that are required, you have additional professional qualifications, additional exams that they have to go through, professional body exams, if you want to put it that way. What would be the case, what would be your argument in those cases? Shouldn't they be involved in the quality assurance of those qualifications? That clearly is an additional professional qualification that has nothing to do with the academic qualifications of higher education institutions and so on. That is the first one. And the second question that I have is, I think the argument of the Chartered Accountants this morning was that, yes, professional qualifications should be registered, but not the professional designations. And they argued that the professional designations is fundamentally different in a number of ways. It also has to do with ethical standards, disciplinary action that can be taken. As far as that is concerned, these professional designations can actually be revoked, which is not the case with professional qualifications. When the professional designations are also required to be registered, then it means, in a sense, that there will be the students who have acquired these designations will they're basically entitled then to these designations, which would make it impossible to revoke it in the sense that professional bodies are doing it at the moment. And making out a case, in addition to that, that the international position is actually that professional qualifications are being required to be registered, but not professional designations. And what you are arguing here now is that you actually support the fact that those professional designations will also have to be registered and form part of the process registered with the NQF. So what would you then say with regard to those arguments that makes, in my opinion, a distinction between the professional designations and the professional qualifications?
Chair, if I may attempt to answer those questions, if I could deal with the first one, the requirements for professional registration over and above the academic qualification and the role of the professional body in respect to those. And if I may, I'd like to take an example which is perhaps more neutral than those in the health sciences or in psychiatry's case, and that would be the PRNs, professional engineering qualification. From the point of view of higher education in South Africa, we believe it is quite appropriately the role of the professional body to specify the professional experience requirement over and above the academic qualification that an aspirant engineer must have before she or he can get PRN status. And clearly, the professional body must determine the nature of that. What we're saying is that for PRN status, you require two things. To become a PRN, you require two things. The status requires something else in addition. You require the academic qualification. That is a qualification registered on the HEQF. For that academic qualification, the QA and accreditation roles, we believe, are the roles of the Council for Higher Education. What the professional body says is required over and above that in terms of professional experience is clearly a matter for the professional body, and appropriately so. In other words, the universities, higher education institutions, will offer a quality-assured, approved, accredited qualification. That will be, we hope, sufficient to meet the exit competencies that the professional body determines for the academic qualification. What they then specify in addition in terms of professional experience is a separate matter. And that, obviously, the QC for Occupation and Trades and the professional body and SACWA in other ways must determine. Our concern is with the QA and accreditation process of the academic qualification. If I can go on to the question of the SAICA issues in respect of the registration of designations. Obviously, I can't speak absolutely on this issue, but I would believe, sir, that there's a distinction between registration of the professional designation, and in SAICA's case, the key one would be the CA, Chartered Accountant South Africa, on the one hand, and who may use and who may practice using that designation. In other words, what we believe is important about the HEQF is the HEQF creates an order for the public of qualifications so that these are clearly understood. It provides a framework for articulation and for progression in higher education qualifications. Similarly, I believe so that the registration of professional designations would create a similar order. The fact of the matter is that a chartered accountant, a person who has a CA, may only use that professional designation provided he or she remains registered with the professional body. And that, amongst other things, requires the payment of usually annual fees, and secondly, that she or he adheres to the professional code of conduct. But the fact that the designation, CA, or PRN, or Fellowship of the College of Medicine, or whatever, is registered with SACWA, means that there's a clear understanding of what those professional designations mean. It doesn't, by being registered on the NQF, mean that a person who has met those requirements, but who then gets disciplined, or ceases to have his or her professional registration kept current can use them, and I would make that distinction.
May I add to that? I'm an engineer, and I think I'm the only one on the front here, but I can speak to this issue. But I think, and I don't want to lose the essence of the point that we're making, which is
your mic on.
I'm sorry, Chair. I was saying that I don't want to lose the essence of the importance of this question. And that is that we want the Act to recognize that each of these bodies performs separate but complementary functions. And that in that separateness and complementarity, we are not assured in the way that the Act is framed, that the overlaps have been very clearly understood, defined, and that in the complementarity, we haven't been able to be assured that influences unnecessary and undue may not be brought into bear. And one of the important points is exactly this issue, that the professional body has the right to credit on and acknowledge a professional standing. Our task is to produce graduates who in our mind and by agreement with professional bodies are ready to start to become engineers or doctors or lawyers. All of these professions have in various forms internship programs, exams, essays at the end in whatever form. And usually those are of duration 2 to 3 years. So there's an acknowledgement of the different and separate roles, but importantly that they must be complementary. And I think the Act must try to protect that separateness as well as encourage the complementarity. Thank you.
Literally in the bill, what section do you want us to change in order to accommodate that? What is the amendment? What is the proposal?
There's a clause in the bill that requires the Quality Council to cooperate. That we welcome, but we believe that that clause could be amended or could be expanded to define the relative domains of the Quality Council. That is clause 29.1.
Chair, may I also add that in the bit submission that you have before you, it's really only up to page 6 that relates to the two bills that we are talking to here. However, the bit submission also includes our thoughts and comments on a bill proposed by the Department of Public Works, and we think that it is here that that sort of conflict needs to be resolved. That the High Education Amendment Act, Inker bill, must allow us to be able to defend against or express our concerns in regard to something like the Department of Public Works' proposal, which is in fact to direct our education qualification, but from another ministry, through the establishment of effectively a quality assurance body or professional council.
It assists us on our side. When there is a proposal on the table, says clause 3 is written this way, this way. Because when you are making your submission and speaking, it becomes difficult on our side to say exactly what way you propose. And we make it out to say, what did this committee do? Good on our side. It makes things easier. Remember, we're activists. We are just receiving this thing. We want to know, do we change that or don't we? If we are changing to what? If you don't have a clear written proposal, it becomes difficult to. Address that one again. Psyche address that 29.
Chair, could you be given some time to formulate the proposal as the meeting proceeds?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I appreciate it. I'm saying this is more of a general. I'm saying on our side it becomes easier because when you're sitting there saying this and that, we're not technically inclined to capture. And sometimes we miss out. Can I say something that I was supposed to have said from the very start again? Why do I have to be dealing with one bill. I hope people, stakeholders, appreciate that we are dealing with three bills at the same time. We are not going to go to higher education at GenFed, because those are consequential. Once you agree on this, it automatically affects others. So I just want to put up front so that people don't say, we thought we were coming from three bills. Nobody said anything about higher education. We are consciously aware of that. Thank you so much, then, Hester and we are now crossing over to health. Well, crossing over to health profession Council of South Africa. Is Thais Castilian? Japan. So I hope people do appreciate where we come from, because we are getting different vibes from different stakeholders.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll just introduce us. My name is Boyce Mkize. I'm the Registrar and CEO of the Health Professions Council of South Africa, and I'm with Advocate Puikanyo, who is our General Manager, Legal Services. I must just indicate, Chair and Honourable Members, at the onset that the submission that I'm making is actually the Health Professions Council of South Africa submission, but it is actually a much broader mandate than that, in that it is supported by four other statutory health councils who fall within the forum of statutory health council. And those, can you go to the slide? And those are the Allied Health Professions Council of South Africa, the Dental Technicians Council, the Health Professions Council, which I'm representing, the South African Nursing Council, as well as the Pharmacy Council. Mr. Chairman, just to set the context in terms of this submission, I think it is important for honourable members to appreciate that the statutory health councils are creatures of the statute, obviously, as the name would suggest, and they are empowered in their own right to set standards in terms of education and training, but also to engage in quality assurance processes. The HPCSA Act, for example, was recently amended, and in terms of that amendment, which was passed last year, Honourable Chair, the Health Professions Council is actually deemed as an ETQA in its own domain.
But as I said, my members are pacing through. You don't have the slides. You have the speaker box, so you won't find it in your package. The slides, I couldn't.
My apologies, Chair, and honourable members, I beg for indulgence. The slides are really just a summary of the substantive input that is here in the documents. It's essentially just to facilitate a very brief presentation rather than going through line for line in the document. Can go on. Then just in terms of the bill itself, I think we support the bill, at least the spirit of the bill, in terms of its object to integrate processes and structures involved in the setting and maintenance of educational and training standards, as well as quality assurance. That spirit we support. However, I think it is the mechanics of how that spirit is carried through that we feel needs to be further interrogated and considered by this committee. In terms of the substantive comments on the bill, there are a few issues really that are of concern that we would like to raise, and these really follow in the following order. First of all, the bill in our view does not carry forward the spirit that was contained in the Higher Education Qualification Framework of 2007, the policy, in terms of which there would be automatic recognition of the organizations that are statutorily mandated, such as the Health Professions Council. The second point, Honorable Chair and members, is that the bill seeks to rationalize structures in quality assurance, but inadvertently creates a conflict of laws in doing so by overlooking the existing statutorily mandated quality councils in the profession-specific sectors, such as the health sector, as well as the built environment. For example, the engineers, they have their own statutory council, etc. And in overlooking these existing structures, the bill inadvertently then perpetuates the fragmentation of structures in quality assurance realm or domain, rather than create the integration that should be. In fact, I may just indicate that one of the major difficulties, and this emanates even from the presentation that you've just heard from HESA, the key issue, Chair, is that the definition around what constitutes a professional body is in itself unclear. There is no reflection in terms of that particular definition encompassing statutorily mandated structures such as the Health Professions Council of South Africa and the four other councils that I have alluded to before. And that does create a problem in terms of understanding the purport of that Section 29.1 and its relation and application to structures such as the Health Professions Council. We believe that there should be an amplification of that definition. Not only an amplification, but also a clear distinction between professional associations, professional bodies, which are basically loose associations or coalitions of professionals that are not statutory bodies, as opposed to bodies that actually exist because they are mandated by statute in terms of Parliament. And so we're recommending, Honourable Chair, that the bill actually should make provision for the following. Number one, that there should be an automatic recognition of statutory councils. Number two, that an integrated model which will obligate statutory councils and proposed quality councils in the bill to cooperate with each other. And I think that spirit is already there in the bill, but I think it can be made much more elaborate and much more clearer in terms of reflecting the clear model of cooperation. And thirdly, Honourable Chair and members, that the bill should make it obligatory for the statutory council and any other structure that is involved in quality assurance processes to actually comply with the NQF principles. Fourthly, we want to suggest, Honourable Chair, that the bill should also make provision for agreements of cooperation between the quality councils and statutory health councils or statutory councils in general, so that those agreements then are sort of legislatively mandated rather than something that would depend on the desires of those that are in power in those councils. We believe that that model of cooperation would go a long way in ensuring that the spirit of the bill is carried through, that there is cooperation rather than fragmentation, that we are able to focus on those areas in which we have the strength in terms of the professional framework that we are supposed to uphold. And just on that, Honorable Chair, just a comment on the very submission that we just had from HESA. In relation to the Health Professions Council and, of course, the Statutory Council, because this impacts directly on the very notions and propositions that we are putting forward. We do need to interrogate, and I think the committee still needs to interrogate that proposition further, because it may lead to legal and practical difficulties or complexities, as it were. Practical complexities in the sense that you have a difficulty in determining where the academic qualification ends and where the exit outcomes determination begins. And therefore that tends to create a disjuncture which, in our view, would actually be superficial because when we, for example, look at the qualification of an MPCHB that is intended to qualify a medical practitioner. In as much as we look at the exit outcomes and competencies, we also are enjoined to look at the very formative substance of the qualification, because it is that formative theoretical substance that informs the kind of practitioner that you are going to have at the end of the day in terms of their clinical competence. And so the kind of distinction that is being put forward, in our view, may with respect be a superficial one. And I think it is precisely because of that reason, in the first place, that the model needs to be thought through quite carefully in terms of that distinction. But the second complexity it would create is the legal one, Honourable Chair, in that the existing legislation of the various councils, as they are mandated statutorily to exist and to perform certain functions, such as quality assurance, does not actually make a distinction in terms of the determination of the exit outcomes as well as the overall qualification itself. This is viewed as an integrated process that covers both domains, that is, the essence of the qualification as well as the exit outcomes. And so you would have a difficulty just in terms of the harmonization of legislation in that regard. This is why we are making a recommendation that says within the confines of the existing proposed NQF bill, there could be a model there that is established, which model would actually recognize the respective worth or respective contribution of the relative structures that are involved. Maintaining the CHE, for example, in the higher education realm, as it is, maintaining the statutory councils as they are and making recognition for them in the bill, but going a step further by ensuring that these statutory councils, as well as the quality council CHE, are obligated in terms of the said bill to actually enter into cooperative agreements. And they will deal with the details of how the mechanics of engagement would play themselves out in practice in terms of dealing with the academic qualifications and the exit outcomes. And so this, in essence, Honourable Chair and members, is our submission, and we would be happy to further engage even with the technical drafters if this is necessary to suggest precise formulations that could further enrich the bill. And in doing so, we believe that this could integrate and coordinate our processes and eliminate the fragmentation that we've always had, and therefore carry forward the spirit of integrating the National Qualification Framework processes in our country. We thank you, Chairman, for the indulgence and the opportunity. We'll be happy to take questions.
Any questions or comments? Yes, and welcome.
I think you made mention more or less of the following, that the bill tries to integrate academic qualifications and the professional exit outcomes, something that to that effect. Are you happy or not happy with the way that the bill is doing that? Do you think there should be much more of a clear distinction between the exit outcomes required by professional bodies on the one hand and the academic qualifications, or how do you think one should deal with it? And is the bill inappropriately and inadequately dealing with that distinction?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. In our view, the bill really is adequate to the extent that it provides for qualifications, academic qualifications. We don't think that the bill actually makes for a segregation that we were taken through by HESA in their submission earlier on. And we support the fact that distinction is actually not made, because in our view, it is actually a very superficial one. And this is why we're making a recommendation that says, rather than trying to scramble the qualification itself, you rather be looking at the respective roles of the structures that are involved in the maintenance, accreditation, and recognition of that qualification. And of course, the parties would have to spell out the mechanisms and the mechanics of how that accreditation program or processes would play themselves out in practice, recognizing the fact that the qualification cannot really, in essence, be broken into your academic versus exit outcomes, as I've tried to elucidate with the recommendation or example of the medical qualification, for example. So in our view, the bill is fine to that extent, but what we're saying is that there should be a clear elucidation of the respective roles, and our view is that the cooperation model should actually be reflected in the bill, so that there is clearly articulated cooperation between CHE as a quality council in higher education, as well as statutory councils who are responsible for quality assurance in the profession-specific qualifications or domains.
Thanks, Chief. Yes, but shouldn't we distinguish the medical profession in that regard from some of the other professions, like for instance the CAs that has been here, because in the case of the medical profession there isn't an additional professional sort of qualification or exit outcome or whatever the case may be, in addition to the academic qualification that is really needed. So you would appreciate the fact that, for instance, in the case of the in the case of some of the other professions, there is an additional exit outcome, whatever you want to call it, that is required. So there is a distinction to be made between the medical profession in that regard and these other professions.
Thank you, honorable member. Well, one cannot argue against that. The accounting profession, perhaps even the lawyers, perhaps there will be different processes for those. But in the health sphere, where we are, we have 12 professional boards, for example, that fall within our jurisdiction and domain, dietitians, psychologists, the rest. But all of those professions essentially have to be qualified through our registration or license, through our licensing processes, on the basis of the academic qualification. And that academic qualification is offered becomes the basis for us recognizing their competence in those particular areas. Of course, there could be one or other requirements in terms of internship training, and those are additional stuff in terms of practical exposure. But the academic qualification upon which we base the competency and licensing is actually based on those academic qualifications. And we make determinations in terms of what sort of issues need to be covered in terms of the curriculum that informs those particular qualifications. So there could be an exception that is made with other professions, but from where I'm sitting, it is not possible to scramble the qualifications within the health sector or the health realm because of the nature in which the licensing as well as the academic requirements are actually integrated or intertwined.
Given your input, is there any area, any place, anywhere here, in order to elucidate what you are saying, would you say let us revisit Section 26, 27? Is there any?
Honourable Chair, yes, we are submitting that there are certain areas that may need further strengthening in the bill, and we are suggesting essentially that there are certain areas where there are certain provisions or certain gaps in our view that could be supplemented by imposing further provisions as enshrined in the principles that we've put forward here. And so we're suggesting that those principles should actually be integrated into the bill because they are not currently provided for at least in the way that clearly articulates the respective roles of the structures that should be involved. For example, I mean, the issue of automatic recognition of the structures such as the Secretariat Council is not really explicit in the bill, and we're suggesting that that omission needs to be rectified by actually introducing a new provision that makes for that kind of recognition. Secondly, the issue of a model of cooperation between the existing statutory councils and the quality councils that are proposed or mooted in the bill should actually be defined and set out. Thirdly, Section 29.1, which was alluded to earlier on, which talks about professional bodies, it may need further amplification depending on how we define the professional bodies. In our view, there needs to be a very clear distinction between professional bodies, as in professional associations, vis-a-vis statutory organizations such as the HPCSA, which is actually statutorily mandated. Honourable Chair, as I indicated earlier on, if we are granted the privilege, we are happy to make specific propositions in terms of the drafting that we could share perhaps with the department on the exact specifics of the how the clauses could actually look. We just thought that for today our view would be to propose the principles, the high level principles, rather than the specific formulations.
Thank you. On our side, as I must repeat, on our side as a portfolio committee, we have some our time frame. As we are sitting here, for example, next Tuesday we'll be looking at this clause for clause, article for article, so that we are finalizing this on, I'm talking about Tuesday the 5th. On Tuesday the 5th, in the light of your presentation, we'll be going through this, saying there were three stakeholders who were saying, let us do this in clause 3. Five said this, we are weighing those in the light of that, saying yay, nay, or we change this. This is what we are going to be doing in this venue next Tuesday, the 5th. On Tuesday, the 12th, as different political parties, we are then going to be looking broadly as whether we have an understanding of voting on all those, and it will be dark, and we are through with it. I'm just putting that up front as to which way we are going to be moving. Our meeting today was to accommodate amendments on these things and stand as the stakeholders see it. But then, unfortunately, these things, the amendments always come. This is something new, and this is a broader framework which can be changed even thereafter. So this is the time frame that we're working at. So next Tuesday, the 5th, we'll be sitting in this venue saying, are we accepting, not accepting, why don't we? And then on Tuesday the 12th, we'll be voting on those as parties, and then we pass this on to the bosses. Thanks ever so much. That takes us, therefore, to SAQA. I think it's our last presentation before lunch. We are invited for lunch at 1, and I stand it is meant for all those who have fingers. If you don't have fingers, you are not allowed. It's a finger lunch outside at 1. SAQA, we have been constantly referring to SAQA, 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 SAQA. What does SAQA say?
morning, everybody. Good morning, Honourable Chair. We'd like to, on behalf of SACWIS, thank the committee for this opportunity. There are two members of our delegation. It's Mr. Samuel Isaacs on my left, who's the long-standing executive officer of SACWA, and myself, who is the chair of the authority. SACWA has been preparing for this moment, I think for the last 3 to 4 years, when the third authority began to preempt what may result from the NQF review's finalization. We began to systematically engage our partner organizations in order to ensure that whatever changes come, we maintain stability in the system in the interests of South Africa's learners, both young and old. We have been inspired by the magnificent sculpture outside our constitutional court, which in fact is on the cover of the latest SACWA update, which will be available for you, which is entitled Moving into Dance. And we've adopted this title as our slogan or mantra as a way of recognizing that we need to work together with the other bodies in order to ensure that the system is improved, but there's also stability in the system. In this presentation, we'll be focusing primarily on the NQF bill, and as the Honourable Chair has said, we're in fact addressing all the bills. But we are focusing particularly on the NQF bill, but by implication are speaking also to the other bills. As everybody recognizes, consistency across the system is absolutely crucial. We want to begin by recognizing and commending all those involved in bringing the NQF review process to a close, in bringing the proposed legislation to this current stage, in maintaining unchanged NQF objectives. And SACWA certainly acknowledges the complexities involved in creating an integrated framework. SACWA realizes that it may be very difficult to introduce dramatic changes to the bill at this stage. We therefore set ourselves the task of making very specific inputs to ensure greater coherence, alignment, and integration that would allow for smooth implementation. So I think what our approach has been is very much in line with what the Honourable Chair has been asking, is to make very specific recommendations. In terms of the major concerns, I think the biggest concern is that all the quality councils will not be operational at the time of the proposed implementation. So there's unevenness in the system. The unevenness potentially in the NQF implementation we need to try to avoid. Changes must be reflected in the suite of bills for coherence and a consistent legislative framework. Our specific proposed changes to the NQF bill are based on two principles. And this has been stated by a number of the representations today, that the NQF is a single integrated framework. And we need to do whatever it takes to ensure that the public accepts this. The second key principle is that all new structures should have meaningful roles and clear responsibilities assigned. In the interest of building our learning nation, we are anxious that the important work that have been developed over the last 14 years is not stalled by us having to engage in lengthy contestations if there's ambiguity in the legislation. We have highlighted sections for proposed changes to the bill in our submission, and we give reasons for these. So if we look at clause 7, which is on page 5, we highlight that there is one single integrated NQF comprising three coordinated sub-frameworks, and we propose that the three sub-frameworks are called just that. So it would be, for example, the HEQF sub-framework. And the reason for this is to ensure the alignment across the different legislation. The proposal is that which in fact I come back to, that the sub frameworks are in fact we name them as sub frameworks. So it's a higher education qualification sub framework, for example, so that it's clear to anyone reading the legislation that they are sub-frameworks of one national qualifications framework. In terms of disputes, we are proposing that on page 6 and the 2F, the addition of the word legal is place to clarify the type of disputes involving SACWA or a QC which needs to be resolved. And the reason we have for making this more explicit is to draw the distinction between the legal and other disputes because of SACWA's role as a mediating body in situations of conflict between the QCs. To move to issues of coordination, clause 12, page 7, we propose that it's just making it more clear, we delete the language of facilitate the coordination of, which is quite weak, to just say coordinate the sub-framework. And this is really to clarify what the specific role of SACWA is. Under the functions of SACWA, clause 14, the proposal is that SACWA must oversee the implementation of the NQF and ensure the achievement of its objectives. The reason that we want to ensure that highlighting SACWA's oversight role in the implementing of the NQF and advancing its objectives is clearer and less ambiguous. Turning to the functions of SACWA, in clause 14 at page 8, that we insert... Okay, sorry, yeah, I apologize, yes. Apologize for that. We insert as F2 that SACWA, so it's around mediation. We resolve emerging problems and mediate disputes regarding the QCs. And the reason for this is that it's just to clarify SACWA's role as oversight body to mediate in the cases of conflict between the QCs. And this links back to the point of needing to insert the word legal, as I've pointed to above. In terms of the continuing with the functions of SACWA, in terms of the level descriptors, that we substitute reach, we substitute reach agreement with after consultation. Is that one? Yeah, there was in fact, what is the actual wording of that? We will reach agreement after consultation. You can see I'm getting confused. Yeah. Then, under the function, continuing on the functions of SACWA, which is an overarching point, we propose that we include the term standards under definitions, and in each case where reference is made to qualifications. And the reason is that excluding the word standards is unhelpful when referring to both education and training constituencies. This is also to help to clarify. An additional insertion which we propose, the clause 14, relates to quality assurance, and this is a very important point, as there has been a substantial shift from the joint policy statement with each draft of the NQF bill, which has virtually eliminated the role of SACWA in quality assurance. So what we propose is that an addition under 14E is that we add, with respect to quality assurance, SACWA will advise the Minister through the production of a periodic report on the NQF objectives and quality assurance in South Africa after consultation with the QCs. Two, SACWA and the QCs may collaborate on the production of other reports on the specific topics for the purpose of advising the Minister. So this is really emphasizing that SACWA should fulfill its oversight responsibility through monitoring and research roles with regard to quality assurance. In relation to continuing with the functions of SACWA, Clause 14 under policy and criteria, the proposal is the insertion as 4 and 5 that SACWA receive policy and criteria for sub-frameworks from the QCs and advise the Minister in relation to the NQF and receive policy and criteria for assessment, recognition of prior learning, and credit accumulation and transfer for sub-frameworks from the QCs and advise the Minister in relation to their alignment to the NQF. And the reason for this is that SACWA needs to ensure that policies and criteria for sub-frameworks are aligned to the broader principles of the NQF. And I think it's in a number of these submissions you'll see the need to strengthen the worries that were coming out in previous submissions around the weakening of the possibilities for an integrated framework. Continuing under the functions of SACWA Clause 14, we wish to propose an insertion of a point around navigational tools. And we wish to propose that SACWA develop and communicate a set of NQF navigational tools to enable learners to comprehend and make informed choices when traversing the sub-frameworks of the NQF. We believe that there has been a lack of overarching guidance and counseling to help learners and educators navigate the system, and we think this is a major oversight. And SACWA, as the oversight body, should develop the appropriate navigational tools in close workings with the other bodies. Then, to turn to the functions of the QCs under Clause 28, we propose that we delete the term ensure that they remain current and appropriate. And this is to align the section on QCs with the proposed changes in SACWA's function and to ensure that there is no duplication. So this is picking up on the previous points made. Under functions, again, under functions of the QCs, under Clause 28, to insert in relation to alignment of functions, we propose that the QC submit policy and criteria for assessment, recognition of prior learning, and credit accumulation and transfer for sub-frameworks to SACWA for comment on and advice to the Minister in relation to their alignment to the NQF and its principles. And this is again to align the section on QCs with the proposed changes in SACWA's function and to ensure that there is no duplication. Then also under Clause 28, we propose in relation to the National Learners Record Database that there be a deletion of the quote, determined in consultation with SACWA, and the words are replaced with required by SACWA. And the reason for this is that the National Learner Records Database is a versatile and reputable database, and the decisions as to the format of data submission should reside with SACWA as the oversight body. Continuing with Clause 28, in relation to the coordination of communication in relation to the NQF, we wish to propose that there's an insertion that, under 2, inform the public about the sub-framework in line with a coordinated communication strategy by SACWA. So the reason here is to ensure the clarifying of the roles and responsibilities between SACWA and the QCs in relation to the critical messages that are sent out around the NQF. Then under Clause 36, this comes back to the previous point that was made, that the three sub-frameworks will in future be referred to as the Higher Education Qualification Sub-Framework, Occupational Qualification Sub-Framework, General and Further Education and Training Qualification Sub-Framework. And this is to align the various pieces of legislation and reinforce the points made so often today around the importance of one NQF. In terms of looking at the way forward, we recognize the changing landscape, and as most of you will know, SACWA is the oldest kid on the post-1994 education and training block, and has vast intellectual and social capital in the NQF environment, both nationally and internationally. And I think you'll see, if you get a copy of the latest SACWA update, how much international recognition there is for the work of SACWA and the importance of the South African NQF. We urge that the legislation strengthens rather than weakens the gains that have been made over the last 14 years. We are, as SACWA, participating actively in the development of the three QCs, and in fact, later on today, we are meeting as together with the Department of Education, Labor, Umalusi, and the CHE, where we have developed an external transitional task team to try to ensure greater coordination and collaboration between us. So playing its apex role through giving leadership and support, we are deeply committed to supporting these legislative changes that will benefit all the learners within a lifelong learning framework, and so strengthen the socioeconomic conditions of our country. And with that, we thank you.
Over to my members for comments. Clear, and there are no comments or questions. So thank you ever so much. I think on my side, I should just appreciate the submission and also indicate that not only are we going to be considering these oral submissions, we do have about 13 submissions. And some stakeholders decided not to come yet before us. It does not mean their submissions are not important. So we're going to go through all of those and try to go clause by clause and see what is it that we can add. And I want to believe that your contributions are definitely going to add value to this document. So we're hoping that on the week starting off of the 18th, that week starting on 18th, 19th, 21st, 22nd, we'll be tabling this bill in Parliament. By that I mean we'll be debating it to say what is it, what is our decision, what is it all about. After which it is going to be going to the NCOP, and thereafter turned into an act by President. As a committee, again, I really appreciate. I do know it takes time. When you look at submissions, you could see that you went all out trying to analyze this clause for clause, and we really do appreciate it. You are all invited, therefore, for lunch. Bring your fingers along. It's a finger lunch. It is outside. Thank you ever so much.
Andre Gaum.
Gaum?
Yeah. Gaum,
G-A-U-M. G-A-U-M. Has the whole committee list changed from what I've got here so mixed up? But now we've found it. No, that is not G-A-U-M.
G-A-U-M.
Yes, I will write it on here, but that's G-A-U-M-A-N-T.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.